So this is lesson 5 and chapters 8 through 10, and we're talking about the healing mission of the kingdom. So first of all, today's Ash Wednesday. So I know that most of you are not liturgical people, but it being Ash Wednesday means it's the beginning of Lent. And the beginning of Lent is an invitation, hopefully it's an invitation, for you to voluntarily choose to come away from some part of your kingdom, come away from some part of your cruise linership, which we're doing with the clothes. But it's really an invitation for you to disconnect from something that you might be overly identifying with, that might overly identify who you are rather than who you should be or who God wants you to be. Maybe defining me, allowing then more space for God to define you, for God's kingdom to define you, and be more attached to the source of life rather than what you kind of find life in outside of the source of life, which in turn then gives you much more, I'm going to use this word and you're not going to like it, aura of invitation. It gives you much more, you become much more a sense of an invitation to the kingdom when you're not so attached to the things of your own little cruise ship. That's what Lent is all about. It's pulling you away from those things so that you become more attached. It's really, Lent is really the come. Come away from your kingdom so that you're more attached to my kingdom, more attached to me, so that you become the invitation, the priest that you were meant to be. So it's all, I always find it fascinating that these liturgical observances come through our Bible studies in such appropriate times, that it would come today. So there have been times when we've actually done the Lent kind of giving up, disconnecting. I think we're just doing that throughout the whole Bible study. You know, we've done it with food, we're doing it with clothing, we'll do it next month with spending. But I want you to think about that it's really an invitation to you so that you become an invitation to others. When you're so connected to the things of this world and you're building your own kingdom, you're an invitation to build your own kingdom rather than the invitation to the kingdom. And so you become a barrier, actually. So from that, we go into what Jesus is looking at today. and what it does with his disciples is he's already told them about the blessings and how the blessings come to the empty and the unable to barter. He's already talked about that. He's talked about what the kingdom looks like and how it is lived out. And now the last thing he's really going to tell them is the mission of the kingdom is healing. The mission of the kingdom is restoring life, restoring wholeness. This is the mission of the kingdom. Mm-hmm. And we do really begin to skew that when we don't realize what the mission of healing looks like and what it really is. And then we get lost in thinking healing is just that was a nice thing that Jesus did. Rather than, it's the mission of the kingdom. It's exactly what the kingdom is all about, is restoring wholeness to everyone. Now, remember Jesus is talking from Matthew's point of view to the religious, and the religious are always thinking about the relationship between you and God. That is their full focus. And yes, you're supposed to love others, but it's really the focus between you and God. That's the paradigm they live under. And then they begin to say, well, this is what it looks like. Jesus knows that in kingdom, there's only one relationship that counts. And that relationship is a Trinitarian relationship. So in the kingdom, there really isn't any such thing as just the relationship between me and God. Mm-hmm. That's just not true in the kingdom. In the kingdom, it's a Trinitarian relationship. It's between me and God and others. It's always that way. So Jesus works from that paradigm, realizing that he's going to have to address both relationships to restore And that's what the kingdom is going to do. It's restoring relationship. So he's going to have to address both relationships as they're intertwined. They're always intertwined. We can never live as if they are separate. Once we live as if they're separate, we've stepped outside of the kingdom. So he's going to address those as they're intertwined together. In Jesus' world, in the world that he was living then in Israel in the first century there, the most visible barrier to relationship was illness. That was the most visible barrier to relationship. And so he's going to start with that because it's what they understand completely, that that is a barrier to relationship, that illness is the visible barrier to participation, actually, in relationship. And if you can't participate in relationship, you really are not being able to participate in life. So that's true here as well as in the kingdom. This is where we begin to see the kingdom being visible more and more, is participation in relationship equals participation in life. And since the kingdom is all about restoring that relationship, he's going to give the disciples and us the tool for restoring that relationship, and that will be healing. So he's going to begin with healing. And of course, as Jesus always does, he doesn't merely stay with just the healing of the physically sick. He's always going to broaden it, and he's going to make it wider, and he's going to make it deeper. So he's going to widen it by not just dealing with physical illness, but also mental illness and emotional illness. Mm-hmm. Any kind of dis-ease, he's going to deal with that on the surface there. So he's going to widen it to that, but he's also going to deepen it, because he's going to say, although illness is what is our first barrier to relationship, underneath it, there's more barriers that you just assume that you just live in, and you forget that they're barriers, and you don't allow relationship there. So he's going to go deeper in that. And that's what happens when, in each of his healings, he reveals what's really going on here, what relationships, what barriers are there, and what's the real need underneath that isn't being met there. So as we look at these healings, I want us to step out of that paradigm of these are miracles that show he's God. That's not what he's doing here. In fact, in Matthew, he rarely does that. He does that in John talks about that. But in Matthew, he's talking about restoring kingdom. It's all about restoring kingdom. So this is what he's doing here in healing. It is the essential mission of the kingdom. So this is really an essential piece. This is what he begins telling his disciples and what he then shares with them as well. So that's kind of where he's going. So we're going to look at each one of the people that he healed. We're going to put them in 10 categories, just like we had 10 blessings and we had instead of the 10 laws and the 10 blessings, and now we have the 10 healings to show the restoration. And Matthew likes to use a lot of these rhythms, because what he's trying to get at, again, is the kingdom is about living in a rhythm. It's about this rhythm that God has, and the rhythm is all about restoring. That's really underlying it all. That's really what needs to happen, is restoring relationship. So he starts out with the leper. Well, 10, because it will always hearken them back to the 10 commandments.
Okay.
So it will always hearken them back to, I'm doing what God was doing right from the very beginning.
Maybe restoring for them. The law can't restore.
Exactly. So he's showing them, he needs to pull them back to that time, because for them, that's their foundation. And he needs to show them, I'm just going deeper on that foundation. So you've taken that foundation and you've made it into rules, as if that's going to get you accepted into relationship with God. I need to show you the deepness of that, because that's what they lived on completely. Okay. Which really is to say we do too, because that's really how we say, well, if you follow God, you're following the Ten Commandments. Mm-hmm. But Jesus wants to enrich us and say, yes and no. I mean, he says, I'm not going to get away with it, do away with the law. I'm going to fulfill it. I'm going to make it deeper for you. I'm going to show you what it really means. And remember, even in Deuteronomy, we said, this is all about relationship. This is about God wanting you to be with him. So Jesus is really trying to bring that to the everyday level of where that is.
10 items
you know, I actually thought about that. I thought, why didn't we do 10? We probably should have done 10.
Yeah.
It's not too late, Joe. Yeah. We can still change it.
Maybe the spending. 10 places to spend. So let's start with the leper. Here's what you need to know about the leper. The leper was the lowest of the low. They were the most outcast of anybody. They were not allowed to be touched by anyone. They were not allowed to come in any contact with anyone. I think most of you know, if they came anywhere near other people, they had to shout, unclean, unclean. They had to identify as, I'm an outcast. Go away, go away. They also were not allowed into the temple. So they could not come anywhere near the temple. They couldn't come up those steps, nothing. So think about this. We're talking religious people. You are outcast from everything. Mm-hmm. From the thing that makes you a Jew, you're completely outcast. From the thing that connects you to God, you're an outcast. The thing that connects you to people, you're an outcast. You absolutely have no access whatsoever to God or people. So he starts with the hardest place, the person who has no access, and he starts with that. So what he does is, as he does all his healings, he reveals what the real barrier is, and then he reveals what the deep need is. And he reveals it by the first thing he does with the people and how he meets them. So the barrier here, the barrier for this leper, is really physical appearance. Because there's lots of other illnesses, but they weren't as outcast as a leper. And a leper's main thing was his physical appearance. It was that his skin was being eaten away. And so he looked scary. So this was a barrier. Why was it a barrier? And literally all the barriers will... I'll answer the same way. Why is it a barrier? Why is it a barrier? Think about it even today. When you see someone that's really scary looking, mm-hmm. physically, what's the barrier? Why do you kind of back up a little?
Fear
of what?
Of catching.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Mm. This might contaminate me. If I come near this person, I might get it. I might be seen as an outcast. And ugly. So really all the barriers are that. They're all about, ooh, what that will make me that person. Mm-hmm. So what are you seeing already? Mm-hmm. All the barriers are purposely separation, right? They're purposely separation. No, I want to be separate here. I don't want to be them.
But
right?
God set all these up.
Yep, God set them all up.
Right? So is he setting up all these barriers for people... So that essentially he shows that Jesus is the only one who can...
Yes, he does it for a couple things. One reason for that, but secondly, because this is what their nature is. And he's giving them opportunities to see this. Just like we always go back to the stove as a little kid. I'm setting up, you can't touch the stove. But I mean it for you to learn that there are certain place times that you're just not responsible enough to be able to play with the stove. But you will come there. So there is this kind of, God sets it up that these are unclean, but it is to get to our nature that we want separation and he wants, I mean, Jesus right away shows immediately, because what does he do to the leper? What's the first thing he does to the leper?
Mm-hmm.
He touches him. That's the need then of the leper, is to be touched. That's his mm-hmm. deepest need, is to be touched. Because how often do you think he's been touched in the last 30 years that he's had leprosy? Never. Never. Probably not even by fellow lepers. He's not been touched. All right, think about that. Think about never being touched. What do we know about babies that are never touched? They die. Physically, they could be completely fine, but without touch, they die. this leper needs to be touched, and that's the first thing Jesus does is he touches him. And so what we find then is that he reveals the barrier being this physical, I don't really want to be identified with you. I don't want to be them. I don't want to be on that side. I want to be on this side. I want there to be separation. And Jesus is saying, the mission of the kingdom is to have no separation. The mission of the kingdom is to heal, is to bring together wholeness. And so he touches him, giving him exactly what he needs underneath it all, is I need to be touched. And we'll explain, as we go through, I think you'll begin to see why those needs, what those needs really reveal. What I also want to show you, well, I'll show that in a minute. The second one is the Roman centurions, and now I have here son/servant. They, we translated servant, but the word they use there is actually the word they use for son. So it's more likely his son rather than his servant. In some respects, that makes it a little bit more like they're a more of an enemy than a servant would have been. So this Roman centurion's son, a Roman centurion is for the Jewish people, what?
Enemy.
An enemy, right? They're the oppressive enemy, actually. They're the enemy that's in their lives and commanding them. Mm. And they're a Gentile, right? So they're not only just the people who are, you know, lording it over them, but they're a Gentile as well. So they don't have anything to do with them. Everybody keeps their distance a little bit from them. As far as the temple goes, because remember, Jesus is looking at the relationship not just between man and man, but man and God. So as far as the temple goes, is the Roman centurion able to go into the temple? Yep, right, the outer court of the Gentiles. So he can, if he wants to worship God, he can actually go in to the outer court of the temple. So far we have lepers, and what's their relationship to the temple? They can't go in at all, right? So what we have here is so here's the temple. So we have lepers. Lepers are here. They cannot come near the temple. They can't come at all. Then we have Jesus coming to a Roman centurion, a Gentile. And the Gentiles can come just inside the temple, and they can come here. So this is the court of the Gentiles. This is also the court where Jesus comes in and throws out the money changers. So we have the lepers outside. We have the Gentiles inside. This, by the way, is the Holy of Holies, which means God's presence. So where are the lepers as far as God's being having access to God? They absolutely have no access. Absolutely not. The Roman centurion gets closer than the leper, but he still doesn't have access, right? He's got closer access. He's closer to that, but he's not there yet. The barrier here that Jesus is trying to reveal is one of race. It is, they're not my people. They're another people, and I will always see them as another people. So when they saw this man, now, if the man didn't have on any of his uniform, would there have been any difference between this man and a Jewish man, this man and Jesus? There would have been two men, right? But because they were from somewhere else, they were a different people, not my people. And so there is this barrier of, so it's not so much the illness. The illness is the first barrier, but Jesus reveals there's more barriers than just physical illness here. There's a barrier of race here, because when Jesus is seen healing each of these people, the people standing there are going, oh, he's touching sick people. But then they're going, but he's healing a Roman. Mm-hmm. So there's more. Do you see how he's digging farther and farther down? There's more to it than just sickness here. How does he heal this servant or this son?
Remotely.
Yeah. By what, though? By his words. What is needed most by this Roman centurion is words of compassion, words that say, I will come. I will do this. And this is why we have a lot of words from the Roman centurion himself. He starts explaining, right? It's like someone who uses a lot of words usually needs words. They need those words. And so the Roman centurion really needs to have words of, I will come. I will be with you. Yes, yes, I will. I will. So we see a barrier of race, and we see this need for words to say, I will come. I will. The third miracle that we have Jesus performing is on Peter's mother-in-law. Now, what can we say about a Jewish mother-in-law in that time? Where would they have stood in society?
Right between the mom, the husband and the wife.
Literally. Where would a woman have stood in Jewish society? Yeah, not quite at the bottom, not as deep as lepers and not as deep as Roman centurions, but the third tier. Yeah, women were basically just not seen, which is why we have what we have here. They were nobodies, literally nobodies. They weren't considered. Remember, even in the Old Testament, when they give counts of things, they only count the men. Mm-hmm. They don't count women or children. They don't count. So here is a woman who doesn't count. Where is she in relationship to the temple?
Come into the next.
Yeah, there's a court of women, right? So she can come here in the court of women. So we have lepers outside, Gentiles get one step closer, and women get one step closer, but that's it. They can't go any closer. That's as far as they can go. So again, what we have here is three different categories of people who have limited access to people because of either their appearance or their race or their sex, their weakness in society, whatever that might be, and we have limited access to God. No access for the lepers until they're healed, which means it's completely out of their hands. So there is a barrier to access both to God and to man in all of these illnesses. But it goes beyond illnesses, and it goes to the things that have happened to them or who they are. I mean, in this case, the leper didn't choose to be a leper, the Roman centurion didn't choose to be a Roman, and the woman didn't choose to be a woman. And yet they are barriers to relationship within the society and supposedly with God. And remember, these are all, of course, perceived barriers. Mm-hmm. So we then go into what we don't consider in the healing miracles, and yet it's in this section, so it's got to fit. We go into the disciples being in the boat during the storm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A question. Oh, what was the greatest need of Peter's mother?
Oh, what was the greatest need? Okay, and this is how you know. The first thing that Jesus does, and the first thing it says that Jesus does, let me read it to you. Nope, that's not the first. Yeah, he saw her.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It says, when Jesus came into Peter's home, he saw his mother-in-law lying there. Okay. That's huge. That is a huge thing that this rabbi sees the woman. That just doesn't happen. First of all, none of the Jewish men would be allowed to touch a woman, mm-hmm. ever, except their own wife. And even to see them, you just didn't see them. What happens in the temple? They're completely cordoned off, right? Completely cordoned off. I think I told you this, that when we flew home from Israel, or flew there from Israel, I sat next to an Orthodox Jewish man. It was the most uncomfortable ride I've ever had in my entire life, because he couldn't, well, yeah, he did all that, but he couldn't touch me, which doesn't sound like a big deal, except that you're in an airplane for 12 hours, and you're in a really small airplane for 12 hours, and I have really wide shoulders, and I, like, this is how I sit, but he couldn't touch me. So I was this for 12 hours. He couldn't touch me. Not only that, he never looked at me. He wouldn't, as an Orthodox Jew, he shouldn't talk to me. He shouldn't look at me. So for this Jewish rabbi to see the woman was a huge deal. So what was her greatest need? It was to be seen as an actual person, to be seen as someone who counted. And in all of Scripture, according to the customs of the social life, she didn't count. But Jesus, by Scripture saying he saw the woman, Jesus counts that woman as someone, as a person, as a human being. Yeah. So what we have here in these first three, and you can almost always tell this, whenever Jesus gives these lists, it's always going to be in those first three that is the nugget of, here, I'm just telling you. And Matthew does this all the time. He did it in chapter 1 with giving you the genealogy. I'm going to tell you the whole story right now in nutshell form. And so he does it here. I'm going to tell you right away, the needs of people, the needs of not having a barrier will be touch, word, and to be seen. Those will be the three needs that we need that will bring to us the fact that someone actually wants to be with us. That's exactly what we said when I asked you the question, right?
Touch, words, and what?
Touch, words, and to be seen.
Which is what happens in a marriage ceremony.
Exactly.
You take off the veil.
Yep.
You exchange words, and then you exchange a kiss.
That's right. Oh. That's exactly right. Yeah. So those are the three basic needs that tell someone you want to be with me. And it's exactly when I ask you the question, what do you do when you don't want to be with someone? Kristen said, short words, right? Sometimes even just stop speaking altogether, right? You don't look at them. You're looking away. That's the first thing Robin says, right? You don't look. I don't see you as a person here. I don't see you. And then touch. The first thing Jamie said was distance, right? I don't want to be near you. So we know that instinctively, that's what people need for relationship. And so we know when we don't want to be with someone, we know how to use those very well. We do that very well. Jesus is going to recapitulate that and say, kingdom is restoring relationship. And so I'm going to, as I restore, I'm going to touch, I'm going to say, give words of compassion, and I'm going to see them. And so we're going to see this over and over again in different areas. And he gives us 10 so that we can never say, well, it was just about, you know, leprosy, or it was just about this. He really tries to touch all aspects of physical illness and mental illness and emotional illness as well.
Which is the marriage thing, right? Which is a picture of
wholeness. Yep.
And, you know, yep. Intimacy. I was thinking those are also the three things that tend to go when it gets bad.
Exactly. Well, I mean, my first thought was, you know, when I don't want to be with Bill, when I'm just like, well, I don't like what you did, so I pull away physically. You know, I just, there are times when if we're just not getting along very well, that I'll walk down the stairs and he's walking up, and what do? You kind of like, you know, like, I'm not going to touch you. I mean, it sounds silly. Am I the only one who does that? Oh, thank you. Yeah, yeah. So you do that, and he asks you questions, and you go, yes. No. You know, just the words, right? And how do you do the scene? Not scene. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So do you see how essential this is to restoration? It's essential. And yet, for some reason, we think the gospel is all about just telling them what they need to do. And we're not about healing. We're not about bringing together restoration. I mean, guys, if you don't see this as the pivotal piece of the mission of the kingdom, then we've lost what Jesus is intending to do here. So we go on to the disciples in the storm. So now we've talked about all these people who aren't, you know, in any of these places that's close. Now we have disciples who are men, right? Who, where would they be allowed in the temple?
One more,
closer here. Not in the Holy of Holies, but in the holy place. They'd be allowed there. But these are disciples who are, they're kind of the new insiders. Remember, Jesus has decided to make them the new Israel, to reinvigorate. And they're not quite sure. They're unlike, really? This is really who I am? So they're in that holy place, but not quite sure they belong. They're just not quite sure, and they're not quite there. And so we have this situation of people who belong but don't quite feel like they belong, which really is an indication that no one feels like they belong. Mm-hmm. And we have them coming into the ship, and we have this storm. By the way, underneath the words, if you find that out, it's not a storm. It's actually an earthquake that happens. So this is the first of three earthquakes that happen in Matthew. So again, Matthew's just saying, I'm shaking you up. I'm shaking everything, which really Scripture talks about in Hebrews, that what he's doing in restoring the kingdom is shaking all the stuff that's not supposed to be, and he's going to shake it away. Kind of like us going through that narrow gate where you just got to let go all that baggage. That's what he's doing here.
Can I have a question?
Yeah. How do I know it was an earthquake?
Yeah, because it doesn't say, then there was an earthquake.
It does, but in the Greek.
Oh.
So you just have to look up the words. Because you have to remember, translations are always going. This is always going to happen. You know, probably in the original translation, when they said violent storm, it actually says shaking storm, something like that. They would have got it. You know, I can't explain always why they don't always. Most of the time it's because language just moves too fast for us to do that well. But, and that's true, yeah. So we have them. So what's the barrier here? They're not sick. But the barrier here to relationship is fear. Or how Jesus says it, he calls them little faith. Mm-hmm. Fear is the same as little faith. That's the barrier here to relationship. And Jesus kind of shakes them like, this is a barrier for you to have fear here. But then what do they really need? What does Jesus do to them? He speaks, right? And what kind of words does he speak? Reassurance and peace, right? He speaks calm into them, which is exactly what they needed, right? Calm. I need words of reassurance. That, remember, their whole idea is, I'm in the holy place, but I'm not sure I belong. That's really their fear. I'm not really sure I belong with Jesus here. I'm not really sure I belong in relationship with God, even. I'm not really sure. And what does he do? He meets their deepest need. I'm reassuring you. I'm calming you down. Yes, you belong.
Gosh, I think everyone can identify.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Well, even just the idea of healing is beyond the overt.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. And this is why we talk about
getting to the
subvert. Right. So it's not just physical. This is emotional, right? This is really emotional. So he really, and Jesus does this all the time. He's always going to address on a much broader level than we think, and a much deeper level than we think. All right.
Or want.
Yes, most times. So we've gone from that section. So that the first four, not surprisingly, the first four really deal with the relationship with God, where they can be in the temple. Mm-hmm. The last six really deal with where they can be with people, which is exactly like the Ten Commandments, yeah. Right? Same thing.
Oh, stop it.
Here's the thing about that. It's cool. We really like that. And we like the fact that Matthew kind of plays with this. It's not essential that you see that. It's not going to make really all that much difference. But what it just tells you is the intricacies that God has put in his word are pretty amazing. So for you to think that his intricacies in your life can't be just as deep and pretty amazing, that he can bring from your, you know, what happened to you as a 7-year-old to now, you know, it's the same. It's exactly the same. So the next one, our fifth one, is the violent demoniacs. So for them, they called anyone a demoniac if they had anything wrong with them that made them out of control. So that was a demoniac. So today, most of that would be psychiatric. And yet there definitely still are demon-possessed. But that whole group would have been the psychological illness. These also, not only were these people out of control, demon-possessed, but they were also Gentiles. So that's what you need to understand. I should show you pictures from Israel, but in Israel, whenever it says they're on the Sea of Galilee and they cross to the other side, mm-hmm. In the Sea of Galilee, I think I showed you, the Jordan River literally divides it in half, the sea, and there's literally a stream that goes through that divides it. And so when they say they went on the other side, they went on the other side that was on the now Syrian side, what is now Golan Heights. But for them, it would be the Gentile side. So that's what he means when he says that. So when he goes over to the other side of the lake and he goes to the Gadarenes, that is a Gentile place. Mm-hmm. So here we have demoniacs that are Gentiles. Mm-hmm. How are they related to their society? Where are they?
They're out.
So here, they're not only are they Gentiles, they're outside of Jewish society. They're outside of their own society. They're outside. This is like a leper for a Jew. They're completely out. They're in the tombs, right? They are with the dead people. They don't count at whatsoever. So they're definitely outside. What's the barrier for them? And that is their emotional behavior. Their behavior is really the barrier. Nobody wants to come near them, right? What does Jesus do with them? He only says one word. And it's a word of release. He says, go to the demons. Go. Move. I think actually is the Greek. Move to the demons, he says. What he does to them is he gives them words of release. In other words, this is not who you are. I'm telling you, this is not, I'm giving you the words to say, this is not who you are. I see you underneath. Mm-hmm. So these words of release them from other people seeing them as dead. This is not who you are.
So did you say what these two are?
So the barrier is emotional behavior, and the need is words of release. So again, we have words here. The next person that he encounters is the paralytic. This is the one where they bring in, the friends bring him in. How is the paralytic associated with his society?
Burden,
exactly. He is not at all able to move within society. He's a burden to society. And so the barrier here is dependency, is his inability. Basically, his inability to be independent, that becomes a barrier to people. What does Jesus give to him? How does he heal him? Mm-hmm. With words, right? So words of mercy, he actually relieves his guilt. So he relieves that guilt of...
because of the faith of his friends. That's
yes. It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
That his friends really believed that this man saw no barrier. Saw no barrier with this man. And we'll talk about the barrier, and wrapping that up is...
So is he affirming the action of his friends as the reality?
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. That's right. And because this man had to be dependent on that, the reality was it's good to be dependent on that.
Right.
So he's releasing him of the guilt of being dependent. Mm-hmm. Because dependency is actually good.
Yeah.
That's what the kingdom has, is dependency.
That when the picture of him and the friends was what is good.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, we go from the paralytic to the calling of Matthew. Isn't it interesting that Matthew puts himself here? Remember last week we talked about the fact that Matthew did not put himself in the place of honor, right? And he didn't put the disciples in the place of honor, naming them, like the high priests would have done, or like the Pharisees and Sadducees. He inserts them here. Where? In the midst of all the illnesses. So what he does is he identifies Matthew, he identifies all the disciples eventually in the section that it talks about the people who are sick, who are ill. This is where they're identified, which is exactly what Jesus is talking about the mission of healing is. You go and you identify with those who are sick, those who are ill. That's where healing occurs. So we have the calling of the tax collector. What association did the tax collector have with his society? Completely despised. He not only could not enter the temple like a leper, he could not enter the temple at all, he also could not participate in the civil society. He was not allowed to go to court and be a witness. A tax collector was seen as a traitor. So he could not even participate in civil society, let alone social society. So the tax collector, his barrier then becomes his occupation and his associations. Both of those combined. So the barrier is not only his occupation, but also his associations. He associates more with the enemy, and as we'll see in the very next sentence, with sinners. And so his association with sinners and his association with enemies makes a barrier for relationship, which says volumes, right? It says volumes about who? Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's where the barrier was for the Pharisees. He associates with sinners and enemies. So, what was his deepest need? Okay, we got to read this again. For me, this is one of those always... surprising. I forgot to write all these.
Nine.
As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man called Matthew. What does he do?
He saw him.
Matthew needed to be seen as valuable because the temple saw him as invaluable. Society saw him as invaluable. The court, the legal system saw him as not valuable. He needed to be seen as valuable. What does Jesus do? He saw a man sitting in the tax collector's booth and he said, "Follow me. I got a job for you. Come with me. You are so valuable that I want you with me." So in Jesus seeing man, and I love the fact, both in the seeings, remember the woman, and here when Jesus sees them and affirms them and says, "I want to be with you," they couldn't do anything themselves. They were not people who came to Jesus like the leper did or the Roman centurion. He came to them. "I see you. Because in their mind, they're not seen. In fact, in truth, they weren't seen. So Jesus comes to them. I see you. I see you.
But I think there's even more, right? Because if his deepest barrier was enemy, he was seen, he was told to follow him, and he ate with him. Friend.
Yep. Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So it went from enemy
right.
to friend.
Which is why to be seen is valuable. When someone's valuable to me, they're my friend, right?
Right.
I mean, that has a lot of value to me.
Well, that's the most value.
That's the most value, exactly.
Right.
And so, of course, every time Jesus does this, he is just making exclamation point after exclamation point. This is my friend. And that's why all of the Gospels talk about this, him eating with Matthew and all of Matthew's friends, Matthew's outsiders, mm-hmm. the tax collectors and sinners together. So that Jesus sees them as valuable, as so valuable that they become friends. And remember, in Scripture, first of all, the word friend that they would have used there and the fact that he's eating with them mm-hmm. mean covenant friend, mm-hmm. mean the tightest bond you can have kind of friend. So really on the same par as marriage. So this is a big deal here, what happens to Matthew. This is why this is included in the healings, because separation has been healed completely, and a huge separation mm-hmm. has been healed completely. All right, we go on to, and here's another weird one that we have kind of thrown in the middle, and I was actually like, why is that there? But we have, all of these, by the way, are questioned by the religious. So we have the scribes questioning, we have the Pharisees questioning, and now we have the disciples of John the Baptist questioning. And what are they questioning Jesus about?
Fasting.
About fasting. Really what they're questioning him about is, your people really aren't pleasing God, so they're not loving God, so their relationship with God is really illegitimate, because they're not going according to what we think it looks like. The barrier here is religious measurements. So remember, we talked about this in Hebrews, that for the Jewish people, they were measured, their relationship with God was measured by certain things, right? By going to the temple, by observing the three big holidays, by doing certain disciplines, and one of them was fasting. So fasting for them was a measurement of their relationship with God. Mm-hmm. Is that true today?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right? We can do that, right? Which is why I say, even in our excursions, these are invitations. These are not measurements to how well you did. And yet, we kind of put that in ourselves, right? Like, this is a rule, and I got to stick by this. Well, no, this isn't a measurement. Hebrews told us that Jesus did away with measuring and books on whether we add up or not. So the barrier to a relationship is these measurements, measuring up. And Jesus says, that's not really a barrier. There is no measurements here for in the kingdom. What does he do? I love what he does. He, of course, gives them words. What kind of words does he give here?
Marriage words.
Mm. Yep. He gives them words of permission to celebrate. Mm. I give you permission to celebrate. Okay, now think about that. Is that a word we give today often when we think about the way we practice our Christianity? I'm giving you permission to celebrate. Or is it more likely that we give the measurements? Because when I give measurements, that's the antithesis of giving permission to celebrate, right? Mm-hmm. So Jesus, of course, turns it on his head. No, no, no. The biggest need is to say, yeah, you can celebrate. You can celebrate with me, that I'm with you. You can absolutely celebrate. So there's this freedom that happens in the healings, because, of course, there's no more separation. If I can celebrate that I'm with him, that he's with me, that is a long way from measuring whether I can be with him or not.
Reminds me of that David worshiping.
Yes. Yes.
Right, I mean, because it was such an offense to the measurements.
That's exactly what
and
it was.
He was just
yep.
like, I want to celebrate.
Yep, that's right. I mean, God is this great thing. I want to celebrate this. So this is why we have both Matthew's calling and then this question of fasting within the healing tens. Do you see how that heals so much? That heals so much in the Jewish community. It heals so much in the Christian community that Jesus says, there isn't a barrier, there's no measurements. There's no, I'm not going to look at you and measure you. I'm giving you permission to celebrate being with me and that I'm with you. So these are healing things, restoring ability to relate. Because if it's about measurement, I can't relate. It's until I get to that measurement, right? I can't relate. Until I do the fasting just right. So, you know, as far as your clothing, if you don't do it just right, then your relationship with God is all screwed up. Right?
Well, it's that I did.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly why he's saying you use this as a barrier to me. And I'm like, no, could you come and be with me in the party? Which, of course, goes to many of the stories that we know that Jesus will tell in the parables. So what, we're going to have the parables then just dance out all of these restoration pieces.
Well, even, like, I was thinking, remember when you were talking about that one thing in group where you're like, and then I realized this about myself. And I was, like, thinking, like, oh, we could either, like, be really down on ourselves about that, or you could celebrate
yes.
the fact that,
yes.
wow, we really are broken.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, wow, God's really faithful. Cause
exactly.
We're really
yes.
broken. I don't know. You know how we were processing, like,
yeah.
the outward, you know.
But yes.
It's interesting. Like, you can approach brokenness two ways.
Absolutely.
Essentially.
And that's exactly, what is Jesus doing? He's approaching brokenness in every single one of these pieces and saying, that's not a barrier to me. That's not a barrier to me. None of this brokenness is a barrier to me. And in the kingdom, none of the brokenness is a barrier whatsoever. I'm restoring.
I mean, sometimes until you find your brokenness, that's the only way you can step to succeed.
Yep. That's exactly right. Which is exactly when we go back to the Sermon on the Mount and the blessings of those who are empty.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next one we have is an intertwined story of the dead girl and the what I'm going to call dying woman. They're the same, so I'm going to put them in one thing. And they're the same, first of all, because they're intertwined. Secondly, because for the Jews, both of them would have been on the same part. They're both dead. Because what is happening to the woman? She's bleeding. And we've already learned this from Old Testament, right? What is blood? Blood is the life. She keeps losing the blood. She's just a mess. So she just keeps losing life over and over again. So here we have, and these last two are kind of the, like, I'm just going to throw it all at you. We have both unclean and unseen. They're both unclean because they're both dead. The girl is dead, so she's unclean, right? You cannot touch a dead body. And the woman is unclean because she's dying. She just keeps on issuing blood. She keeps on, her life is just flowing out of her all the time. So they're both unclean. And they're both unseen because it's a woman and a child, a girl child on top of that. They're both unseen in the community. So what Jesus does at the end is he just piles them all. He says, as far as society goes, they're both dead. As far as the temple goes, they're both dead. They can't approach the temple. They can't approach people. They have no means. So the barrier really is a falling apart life. The barrier is really the inability to bring themselves life completely. That's the barrier. And so many, and this is really, really gets to the core of where we are is, well, their life is just falling apart. And so, you know, what are we supposed to do about that? I have some former friends that have, the husband has gotten into just a lot of trouble. He completely has destroyed his life. And so his whole family's life is falling apart. And literally, my heart is, and it's awful what has happened and what things have been done. And yet my heart is, these people's lives are falling apart and they can't call out, they can't pick up the pieces. There are, it's absolutely impossible to pick up the pieces. What does Jesus say about that is, that's not a barrier to me. Just because their life is falling apart and decaying, that's not a barrier to me. What they need all of it. They need to be seen. They need to be touched. They need to be told, no, I'm willing to actually be with you even in a decaying life. I'm actually willing to be there. And so he gives to these two women all of that. He sees them, he touches them, and he speaks to them. They need it all because they are dead, literally.
Huh.
And the last one we put both in here because of what Jesus is doing at the end, putting these exclamation points about you need it all, is we have the blind men together, and we have the deaf mute, who's also called a demoniac because he can't control it. They have no eyes to see, no ears to hear, which is exactly what Jesus is going to say over and over again. If you have eyes to see and ears to hear, I am not going to let that be a barrier. I'm going to heal that. I'm going to bring that together. In other words, if you can't see something and you can't hear something, what you don't have the ability to do is really understand what's going on. Right? Because that's what he says over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And what he says here by healing these two is the barrier of not understanding, it's not going to be a barrier for me. I will touch you. I will see you. I will speak to you. But not only that, I will let you see. I will let you speak. So he goes one farther. He says, in my doing so, I will let it overflow from you when I fill you. And he goes right back to the Sermon on the Mount saying, you're empty. You can't understand. I'll fill you with my understanding and let it flow out. And you'll be able to see and you'll be able to speak. So what we have here is these last six of these limited access to society, to relationship with men, and Jesus heals that as well, as he brings together the separation that has happened here. All of these, from 1 to 10, all of these are experiencing separation. Separation from people, separation from God. And in separation, we feel alone. But because we're made in God's image, we were made to not be alone. We were made to want to be with others. That's who we are underneath it all. That's who a real human being is someone who needs and desires relationship. So the deepest felt need and desire of anyone is to know that someone wants to be with you despite any barriers. Mm-hmm. Right? Is that not your deepest need and desire? Is to know that someone wants to be with you despite all your weaknesses, all of your bad behavior, all of your vulnerabilities, all of that. That's to know that someone wants to be with you despite all that. That's not a barrier for them to be with you. Is that not your deepest need and desire? That's who we're made to be. That's something that we all should be able to be honest to say, yeah, that's definitely my deepest desire. And so what Jesus is doing in the healings is he comes to them and he says, or touches or sees them with compassion. And the compassion means to feel with. And he does this. In fact, this is where the word compassion comes out twice. He brings this out to say, I'm the same God I was in Deuteronomy. What were the two qualities of God's character in Deuteronomy? One was compassion. That's the first time we see the word compassion is in Deuteronomy. And the other was jealous. In other words, I am jealous for you to be with me. I want to be with you in my compassion. I want to feel, I don't want to just be with you, I want to feel with you. I want to be so a part of who you are that I feel what you feel. And so Jesus in his healings displays the fact that he wants to bring together, he wants you to know that he wants to be with you. He wants to feel with you. And in his touch and in his seeing and in his words, he affirms that I am the God who is with you. I want to be with you. I want to feel with you. I want this deepness of relationship with you. Not just a nice relationship where you're over there and I'm over here and, you know, nice to see you. I want to be with you and I want to feel with you. So he establishes here in experience the I am with you of who God is. That he is someone who doesn't see barriers to being with you, to feeling with you. Jesus' compassion is healing, is restoring. It frees them then for a Trinitarian relationship. His compassion frees them for relationship everywhere. If Jesus, if God says, I want to be with you, even in your weakness and vulnerability and ugliness, then I'm freed everywhere to have relationship. Which is why he then says, I want you to go learn what? Compassion rather than sacrifice. It's not just me. I want you to learn compassion rather than sacrifice. I want you to learn to be able to display, I want to be with you. I see no barrier here. And he ends that section by saying, Jesus looks out to the multitudes and he feels compassion because he sees them, they're distressed, and they really the underlying connotation there is, I see these people who so desperately need someone to say, I want to be with you. I see them. They're like a shepherd, a sheep without shepherd. They're like someone who needs someone to be with them, and there's no one who's saying they want to be with them. And so Jesus not only says, I feel compassion, but there's so many of them. I want everyone to feel my compassion for them. So we have, of course, then Jesus sending them out. What I want to take a look at, though, one of the things we dismiss from here, and one of the things I've kind of come to a conclusion is I just cannot teach every verse. I mean, there's so much in here. So I'm only highlighting this, but I want to just touch on the faith part because that's in here a lot. And I want us to get a little different skew on faith in here. I put this the title Jesus and. In other words, Jesus and relationship with Jesus and anybody else. The key becomes faith. But let me warn you here. This is not like if you have faith, Jesus will have a relationship with you. I want you to be careful of that because I want you to understand from Matthew telling us really what that looks like. Faith here is really believing that someone wants to be with you. Really believing that Jesus wanted to be with them in their stuff. But that faith didn't originate from the sick person's thoughts. That faith originated by Jesus' compassion being revealed. So what happens is Jesus' compassion is out there. He's doing this and people are seeing it and saying, I see, I'm experiencing that Jesus actually is someone who wants to be with. And then that comes, I believe I'm included in that. I believe he wants to be with me too. Do you see the little twist here? The problem we have when we talk about faith and relationship here, faith and restored relationship, is somehow we begin faith with us. We think, if I just believe that Jesus wants to be with me. But that says that it originates with me. I just have to think that Jesus wants to be with me. It doesn't. It originates with the fact that Jesus' compassion is revealed, that it's out there, and all of a sudden I see the reality. Oh, the reality is he actually wants to be with me. And now I have that connect. Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's like the shadow and the reality.
Yes, it is. The shadow, and I'm always nervous about these kind of passages when we bring the faith part in here, because, and here's the indication that it can't be my faith originates and then I get healing, because we have Peter's mother-in-law, we have the dead girl, right? Did they originally think, oh, Jesus is going to heal me? No. They had no, so, and those are the indications that say, the faith didn't originate with you. And we say this, but the belief is underneath is, sometimes we think, I do believe that as a kid, when I came to Christ, that I felt like, I was smart enough to get this. You know, I got this. When in fact, it was Jesus revealing himself in compassion, in saying, I want to be with you. I don't see a barrier being with you. That reality then made my ability to see the reality. Does that make sense?
The fact that they could even have faith for him to do something was because of them hearing of his compassion.
Correct.
Right?
Correct. Exactly. Yes. So which, when we'll get into it, when it's our turn, we'll look at that is, faith comes from hearing, and hearing the incarnate mm-hmm. word, being able to hear and see his compassion. So, okay, so this is one of the problems. One of the things we do with the word compassion is we put it as a, that's a nice character of God, right? When compassion, underneath it all, is really the essence. It's, I want to be with you. I want to feel with you. That's the essence of the kingdom. That's the essence of the gospel. When we put that as just, that's a nice thing that God has, we miss the fact that it's him saying, I want to be with you. In Deuteronomy, over and over again, he kept saying, I want you to come with me. I want you to come with me. We can't miss the compassion, because the compassion is the heart of the kingdom. The I want to be with you. I see no barriers. I want to be with you. I want to be in the us and not you and them.
Well, and restoration can't happen without with.
Right, exactly. Restoration.
Restoration can't happen without.
Without being with. Without the with. Yeah, and we will actually touch on that. So, with healing, there is no guarantee. So with healing or compassion, it doesn't guarantee that a relationship will be restored. What it does is opens up the possibility of relationship restored.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, it's always a free invitation.
Yeah.
It's, do you want it? What we saw in this section, these 10, there was one point where some were healed, but then it was rejected.
Mm-hmm.
Not by the people that were healed, but by the others, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we saw the Gadarenes being healed, the demoniacs, mm-hmm. What did the people say? We don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
And why? Here's the essence. Here's the underneath. You just messed up mm-hmm. the us and them. And now you're going to make us be with them.
Yeah.
We don't want to handle that. They're demoniacs. And you've just changed the whole paradigm of living. We don't want to deal with that. We don't want to deal with we're all us now. That's the essence. So there's always the invitation of, do you want it or not? And to be honest, there's lots of times that all of us say, no thanks. I don't want that restoration. I don't really want to be with them. Right? We've already said it in our own marriages, in our own families, with our friends. If it happens there, it's definitely going to happen with people who we definitely see separate, right?
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's not going to guarantee relationship restored, but it's going to issue a free invitation. The other thing healing does is that it issues a broader invitation.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of the opposite of the public of the Pharisee who stands in front and prays so that other people can see and applaud them. This is the opposite of, I don't even realize when I'm restoring relationship that other people get to see, oh, maybe the invitation is for me too then. There's this hope, and there's this idea that faith is the assurance of things hoped for. And what does everyone hope for? That someone wants to be with them. And so when they see any kind of restoration of relationship, when anybody sees it, you're concentrated on restoration of relationship here. You're not thinking about, oh, if she and I restore our relationships, then everybody gets to see. Man, when you have a relationship restored, the only thing you're thinking about is this, right? But then other people go, wow, if that can happen there, maybe I'm invited to.
Well, we can screw that up too, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, I mean, I even think, having gone to a more charismatic church in the past, I mean, you know, you can probably speak to this. It's like the whole, like, healing thing becomes complicated.
Yeah.
Well, they have the gift of healing.
Yeah.
They can heal people. Suddenly, yes. It's not even an invitation to anything but applause.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right, exactly. Exactly.
We can mess up every
right. thing. Which is exactly why when he gives them the authority to heal, he gives them all these parameters, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is not and what do we have with Jesus? Why does Jesus say to a couple of them, don't tell anybody?
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Exactly for that. Mm-hmm. Healing, restoration is not about getting applause. It's not about saying, oh, look at Jesus. He is so great. It was always you don't need to go tell anybody. He wants it passed down. He doesn't want it to come to him. Do you see that? Jesus was never about everyone seeing this. Jesus was about restoring that it go down and down. So that was one. We'll talk about the others later.
So maybe he wanted them to tell their story of restoration, mm-hmm. but not run out and say, Jesus did this.
Right. Go over there. Go over there and you'll get healed. And then it was all about the actual physical healing and magic tricks.
Versus the rest of their story.
Right. Exactly. Versus their story, their healing, their restoration of relationship now. Because really their story was not just being healed of a physical ailment. It was now they have life. Now they have restored relationship. It was from there on that was the big deal. So what Jesus does then is he sends. So Jesus first heals, and he really tries to give this underneath of relationship is all about you seeing the reality of there being no barriers here. And then he sends his disciples to do the same thing. For the disciples, it was the same world. It was the exact same mission. Jesus demonstrates the fact that he's been given, okay, so that word authority that it uses is the word permission. It's not dunamis. It's not inherent power here. It's that God has given him the permission to use God's power to do this. And that's kind of interesting to know, kind of important to know, because remember we talked about this before. How does Jesus overcome the temptations in the desert? As a man, right? Because he's connected to God, not as God, not as divine. Mm-hmm. So these healings... And for Matthew, this is not about him pointing out he's God. Mm-hmm. This is about him doing the work, the mission of the kingdom that God has permitted him to do, that God has opened up his power to him to do. Because Jesus already set aside his divine powers. But God is now giving him permission to let the power of God flow.
Okay, am I thinking about this wrong? So the first part is all about, right, restoring barriers or restoration mm-hmm. and crossing barriers and everything. And then you have the workers, and then you go into this part. Is it possible that our second deepest need from with is meaning and purpose?
Okay, so remember we talked about in the Sermon on the Mount, the last two pieces of the Sermon on the Mount, the blessings are purpose.
Yeah.
And the purpose is to be a priest, to be able to go out and heal.
Right. So the workers, it's like, okay, now that you've gotten your first need met, now I'm giving you your second need, which is purpose and meaning. And then you go into 10, which is like, let's see how you carry that out.
Yes, right, exactly. So again, it's that rhythm. It's that breathing rhythm of healing is always going out there, restoring, bringing yourself restoration. It comes always in a cycle for God. So Jesus demonstrates these miraculous healings that he has been given permission to open up the access to God. And I hope in your mind you're thinking about what we talked about, the temple here and access to God, because we know where the story goes, right? We know the ending. Because what happened here? We stopped, right, at a certain point. The one thing that wasn't opened was the Holy of Holies. And yet we know that's where it's going, right? Complete access. So he then gives that to his disciples. Now I want you to go and do the same thing. And this is why at the very end of the healings, Jesus looks out and sees the multitudes and he says, I have compassion for them. I want this to spread. I want this to multiply. Right from the very beginning of Genesis, the point is to multiply and fill the kingdom. And so he gives that to his disciples to fill and multiply by doing the exact same thing. He gives them a couple parameters. So, and we'll just briefly go over this. Where does he send them? He sends them to the lost sheep of Israel, which now we're going, well, that was odd because like half the people he healed here were Gentiles. But what he's doing is he's starting them out. This is the new Israel. I'm starting you out. You still first have to go to the lost sheep of Israel because you still are the chosen people, the chosen tool to spread the healing. I'm going to give these first, so you go there first.
Well, by the 12, he's restoring government.
Absolutely.
Right? He's restoring divine government, and then they have to kind of restart.
They have to restart it again. So that's exactly what's happening. He's restarting, go to Israel first, and he's already demonstrated in his healings that the Gentile lands aren't ready because it first has to come. And how? Because of the Gadarenes. Because of when he went actually to the land of the Gentiles in Gadarene, the land of the Gentiles said, leave, go away, we're not ready to receive. So he restarts Israel and the disciples. Okay, start again. We're going to start again with Israel so that Israel can be the one who then carries out the healings.
Because he's living out their history.
He's living out their history completely.
Yep.
Absolutely. And that would have been part of it. But more than that, they upset their whole society, what their society's built on. Yeah. So
for dinner for the next
Well, year. They were. Well, they were definitely. Yes.
I mean, that must have been valuable, right? An entire herd of pigs.
So what happens is he's actually addressing the fact that Jesus is disturbing their economic way of life and then underneath their social way of life. So he is taking the paradigms of life and just throwing them out. Yeah.
But that's what, when you come to Christ, right, or Israel,
yes.
whatever, it was an economic system.
Right.
Right.
You know, they weren't ready for that
right.
economic system.
Right, exactly.
Essentially, where they would have to give up their animals.
Which, and it's not surprising.
You know what I mean?
We have, how did the Sermon on the Mount start? With the poor, right? So he's always going to hit that. And then it talks about, you know, why are you storing up riches? He's always going to hit that because it's where we first live. And then he goes deeper and deeper. How are they supposed to give out these healings? He said, giving them out just as you received them, freely. The word freely actually means undeserved. So it doesn't mean without cost, although it does. It really means undeserved. If I give them out because you deserve them, I just put a barrier up again, right? That's a barrier. Any kind of work, any kind of deserving, any kind of measurement is a barrier. So he says, so when you go heal, make sure you don't put up any barriers to it. Make sure you don't say, they don't deserve it, they do. There can't be any barriers to healing because then it's not restoration and you've just brought restoration outside of the kingdom.
Or faith first.
Right, exactly. That's why I'm always concerned about these passages about faith. It's not faith first, it's that Jesus compassion's first. I want to be with you, and now I can believe that actually somebody wants to be with me. With what? How are they supposed to do it? Freely and dependently, not independently. In other words, they were to go to people. That word worthy is kind of an odd word there. That word worthy that he uses over and over again actually means people who want to receive. So people who are open, ready to receive. Go to those first, so that you can start relationship. Because you can't start relationship in a place that doesn't want to receive, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't work. It doesn't happen. So you have to start in places where they want to receive relationship. Mm. And in that relationship, you become dependent. And you model the life of the kingdom with that dependency. So, you, in other words, you don't go out with all your own means. This is why missionaries are often asked to ask support. And I can remember when the kids would go on mission trips, you know, both Bill and I would say, well, we have the money. We're going to have to, we'll pay for them. They don't have to ask for support. Not biblical. Because the dependency is the model of the kingdom. And why is dependency the model of the kingdom? Because dependency means relationship. See, if I don't have to be dependent on you to support me, then I don't really have to have a relationship, and I can just say, I went on a mission trip, and this is what I did. You know, it becomes a this kind of thing, right? Not on the same level here.
I find that true. I have a lot of friends who are missionaries, mm-hmm. and I feel like the connection is different because they feel that dependence, and they're operating in that. And so they are constantly, you know, they let their people there be dependent on know mm-hmm. what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes this cycle of,
right.
well, I'm not in position to do what you're doing, but
right.
I feel like you're inviting me into it.
Right.
And
right.
so I mean, sometimes I flip that in my mind and I feel like I wish that I could have that feeling of connection with everybody. Like, why can't,
yeah.
you know, somebody who's like, you know, my friend from college, and we're so close, we spend all that time together, I would still like to know that level.
Yes.
Of like, what is,
right.
what is God doing?
Right.
What is happening in your life? What
right.
is going around? But, we're, you know, because they don't, you
there's
know,
independence, right?
Yeah.
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 The,
like,
yeah.
oh,
the,
I don't have to,
yeah.
I don't have, it's, I don't know, I don't think it's unconscious, like, I don't have to tell you what I'm doing, but,
yeah.
The connection comes, like I'm thinking about last week when we were talking about the car and driving. The connection comes from asking.
Yes.
That's the
That's
hard part,
right?
Right.
right.
When we have to
right.
ask.
I
right.
feel like there's accountability there, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's this, literally there's this underlying connection that you have of dependence. I mean, it is the same between a mother and a child where that dependence on the mother makes both of them fulfilled,
mm-hmm.
right? There's that dependence just brings life. That's what kingdom life is, dependent life. So they're supposed to go in that, but they're also supposed to go freely. And in this word freely, what we mean here, when they say, so if someone doesn't receive you, shake the dust off your feet. And they translated this weird, take your blessing back. I mean, doesn't that sound kind of like, fine.
Yeah.
Okay. So the translation really is, allow your blessing to return to you. In other words, they're not ready to receive it, don't shove it down their throat. Don't coerce it. Because you can't force relationship. Right? It's actually the same thing as don't throw your pearls before swine. Don't force relationship. Has anybody ever tried to force relationship?
Ugh.
Doesn't work very well, does it? Yeah. Or have you ever had relationship try to be forced on you? Ooh, it's so, it feels dirty almost. Yes, manipulative. That's exactly what he's saying here. Don't manipulate. Don't try to force. If they're not ready to receive it, step back. The result, then, he says, of healing, of the healing ministry of the kingdom, is that you will upset the status quo. That is just the truth. Because you're making them into us. And if you're whole mission is to make them into us, believe me,
mm-hmm.
there will be many who will just go, oh, wait, we're not doing that. Because we live pretty comfortably when we know that there's a them and there's an us.
Mm-hmm.
It boosts our egos, it boosts all of our kingdoms rather than his kingdom. And so there will be. And what he says is, you can be assured, because that's what you're doing. You're completely switching the paradigms of life. You are going to upset people, and people will lash out. Religious people will lash out. People in your home will lash out. People, your friends will lash out. There will be people who will lash out, because that's just too much. It completely upsets their kingdom. It's kind of like you know, create a big hole in their cruiser. what? No, we're not going to do this. We're going to turn away from this. You're not going to do this for me. Have you ever had a time in your life where someone tried to make them into us and it was really uncomfortable? Can you think of that kind of thing? I'll tell you one, real easy. Lisa, you know, works with refugee families. And, she decided that, you know, we probably needed to be involved in that too. And so I remember one Christmas she brought us to one of the family's homes. Muslim home, big family, really small house, and they didn't speak English. So here's Bill and I, the big introverts, and we're going to go into a very them, a Muslim, big family, speaking Arabic, and it's Christmas. I mean, like everything was outside. And Liz was like, they're just like anybody else. And she's really good at that. And I'm really awful at that. And I was just like, oh. And yet, that's one of my best memories, to have been able to do that. But that was her pushing. Come on, they're us too. And that was really outside of the box. So there are times when God does that with us too. Most of the time, we make sure that God just doesn't have any invitations for us. Right? Even the way we live. I mean, look where we live. We make sure. This is what one of the reasons Lisa said, as soon as she moves out, she's moving to Aurora. Why? Because she hates the us and them. She doesn't like living here because it's very, very us and them. Let me get into, then he gives them the encouragement, and I'm not going to go about this because we're going to talk about this. Matthew will talk about later about taking up your cross, but that's really an encouragement. Let me talk about the mission expands. So he sends his disciples out to do the exact same thing he was doing, healing the sick. So when the world grows, there's growing needs as well. And what we know at the end of Matthew, by the end of Matthew, we see Matthew saying, so that it started here with going to the house of Israel and with healing physical illness. It started here, but it's going to grow. Because the last thing Matthew tells us that Jesus says is, go therefore and make disciples in all the nations. Right? So we're now expanding. And now the expansion of healing isn't just physical healing. He says, baptize and teach them. That's the mission of the kingdom. He did not say healing is no longer the mission. He said this is what healing is going to look like. Baptizing. Always, always, always when you see baptizing, always see equals identity. In baptizing, you're bringing the identity of us to them. So the healing is even more than just physical healing. It expands to you're bringing the identity of us to them. You're getting rid of any barriers. In baptizing, you're get rid of the barriers. Tell them, I want to be with them. Let them know I want to be with them. And teach them that I don't only want to be with them, but I want them to be with others too. So the baptizing and the teaching is just an expansion of the healing, the physical. So the mission is still healing. It's still restoring relationship. It's still getting rid of the barriers, revealing the barriers, and meeting the needs. And it's still in the same way, by touching, by seeing people, by words of, I want to be with you. So we still heal. 2 Corinthians tells us that our ministry is the ministry of reconciliation, that God in Christ reconciled the world to him, was reconciled, is continuing to reconcile, the present tense, is continuing to reconcile, saying that the transgressions are no longer a barrier. And now I give you that same word of reconciliation. Go and be the incarnate word. Let them see, let them hear, let them feel that you want to be with them, that Jesus in you wants to be with them. Be the incarnate word. I can only, though, reveal the barriers and be able to say, I want to be with you when I am with Jesus, when Jesus is with me, when I'm living in that reality, right? Because it's really hard for me to go and say, oh, I want to be with you when Jesus isn't with me, when I'm not with Jesus, right? Isn't it? Because that's just not natural. I like the us and them. Now, sometimes I want you to be us, and then sometimes I don't. If, in fact, we talked about this back before. If you don't meet my expectations, then you know what? I don't want to be us. Right? So unless I'm living in the kingdom with Jesus, unless Jesus is living with me and I'm living that reality, I can't do the healing.
Thing is a huge thing, because I was thinking, so many times we go, oh, we have to get baptized because Jesus was baptized,
mm-hmm.
so we have to do
mm-hmm.
because he did,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But like when you see it as like this, like the mikvah, right? The like removing barriers of identity.
Yep.
I mean, wasn't that's what Jesus was doing?
Yep.
Essentially, he wasn't like, I'm giving you something you have to do.
Right.
He was like, I'm removing the
right.
barrier of me being God.
Right. Right.
From you.
Right.
Like, I'm removing all these barriers to be with you.
Yep.
And now you get to remove your
yep.
barriers to be with each other.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think so many times, I mean, when you sit in a baptism class, it's like, well, Jesus did it.
Right. Which is really,
against
even the word, when Jesus calls people to follow him, there's two different words they use here. And I'm not going to go into it all, but the word that Jesus says when he says, follow me, is come and be with me. Right? Not do what I do. When that one man says, I want to follow you, and he says, you know, the place has no hair, or no place to lay his head, that follow is just go in a straight line and do what Jesus does. And that's what that guy wanted to do. And he said, yeah, that's not the kingdom. The
mm-hmm.
kingdom is actually to be with me.
Mm-hmm.
Have no barriers.
No barriers. Okay.
So yes, that baptism is a big deal. And when we use it as a deed, when we use it as a ritual, a religious measurement,
yeah.
we lose the fact that what Jesus is doing is getting rid of the
barriers.
Well,
using separation from other people
yeah.
instead of removing
yeah,
barriers.
Yeah, right, exactly, mm-hmm. exactly.
Which is funny.
Yeah. So, we reveal other people's needs when we meet their needs by touch, by word, by seeing them as someone I want to be with, which again is impossible for me to do when I'm not with Jesus. For me to heal, whatever gifts I have to be able to heal, is always to touch, to see, and to give them words that say, I want to be with you. Now that's a big difference from the way that we spread the gospel now, right? Because the words we spread the gospel are, here's the truth, just believe it. Here's what you need to do, or here's how much Jesus loves you. But how can they believe that Jesus wants to be with them when I don't want to be with them? When I'm the body, how can they believe? I mean, they know for sure. I don't want to touch them, or I'm like, you know, my eyes are averted, or just my whole language is, I just want you to do the same kind of things I do. I can remember doing this to my family. Could you just do the same things I want to do so that I feel comfortable with you? Because I don't want to be with you the way you are now, but I will want to be with you if you're like me, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you would just bring the barrier down yourself and come over here, that'd be great,
mm-hmm.
right? Isn't that how we do it? Come here. Come to church. When Jesus says, why don't you go out and be with them right where they are? No matter what ugliness they look. And do they believe that you want to be with them there? Or are you like, okay, I'm going to be with them. Oh,
well,
and cringing inside.
Like you're going out there to be with them so you can tell them what this little gospel message. Like,
yeah.
You're a sinner and you need to receive Jesus into your heart. Are you going out there to be with them to say,
yeah.
You're a sinner is always a good opening.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly.
Are you just saying, I want to be with you.
Yeah.
I want to hear your story.
Is the end goal. Well, yeah, I want to be with you to show you how separate we are.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And I'm going to look out here because I'm waiting for the time when I can tell you that.
Right.
And so you can become less different than me.
Right, yeah. Exactly. You know? Exactly. Exactly.
Because you got to be a certain way for God to look on you with love.
And this is why when we miss the mission being healing, then we completely miss the mission. We completely miss the kingdom, and we don't give them kingdom, mm-hmm. right? We don't give them kingdom at all.
Well, and even the definition of healing, you know, like I don't know.
Yes.
You gotta be healed from your lifestyle or whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
No. But doesn't it flip all of our paradigms of how we've always looked at how we go and make disciples? It's healing. It's relationship. It's saying, I want to be with you. I mean, how can you form relationships without, how can you say, hey, Jesus wants a relationship with you? I don't, but you know, Jesus might. It doesn't work. I can't do that. I can't bring Jesus. I mean, he's already there, right there with them. All I need to say is I want to have a relationship with you. So they see the reality that Jesus is there saying, I want to have a relationship with you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so me and when I do that, when I want to have that, in order for anyone to have faith, they have to hear. And the scripture says, faith comes from hearing, and hearing from the word of God. They have to hear the incarnate word of God, the word made flesh, which really means they have to see, hear, experience, feel
with.
Mm-hmm. They have to feel from the body of the Christ that he wants to be with them. And it can't be this intellectual, well, Jesus loves you. It has to come from them hearing the incarnate word, from you making the word flesh that I want to be with you. They have to experience in some way that Jesus really wants to be with them. That barriers don't matter. So the question is, do I display Jesus? Do I manifest in myself as someone, do I display Jesus as someone who doesn't see barriers? And not only doesn't see barriers, but wants to be with you. Feel with you even in the midst of your separation. Or do I display Jesus as someone, well, I'd like to be with you if you clean up your act. I'd like to be with you if you were whole, if you don't have any illness, if you don't have any emotional problems, if you don't, once you understand, then I'll want to be with you. Is that how I display Jesus? Because really what that's saying is, I don't want to be with you. You're separate from me. And the whole mission of the kingdom is to bring together wholeness, restore wholeness. Is the word made flesh incarnate in me so that when they hear, come, they actually believe it? That will depend on how I define my life, on what's defining my life, either my kingdom or his, which goes all the way back to Lent and Ash Wednesday. And what we talked about is, am I receiving the invitations to disconnect from all the things that are defining me so that I am actually with Jesus, that I'm allowing the reality of him with me. That never stops just because I don't see it, but that I allow that reality to shine through because I've walked away from all the things I'm connected to. Because when I allow that reality to be true, it overflows, and then I can be with others, and I can be honest and sincere, I want to be with you.
You know, I mean, I don't know, Robin, you're processing, obviously I'm a verbal processor. You just are forced to think, who are the lepers now? Like, who
yes.
are the people that we just kind of keep having barriers from? Like, okay, so I'll get rid of this barrier with that person, but like, you know?
And so who are they?
Well, what I remember this time a few years ago when I was listening to Jennifer Knapp, and she's a Christian musician. And I remember then hearing news that she came out as a lesbian. And I remember thinking, well, gosh, that means I have to turn off the music. I can't listen to her music anymore. And I don't know if that was like me separating or feeling like the religious measurements were that I should do that. I don't, it was all mixed up for me. So I started thinking, I started praying, and you know what? I felt like God was saying, like, you can't listen to our song, because I listen to our song.
I know.
I am hearing her song. I hear her song. So why is it that you can't hear her song? Mm-hmm. And it just was just, I don't know, I just feel like there's all these things that we're still so tightly holding on to. And I don't know, I just, in this whole thing, I just remembered that, and I just felt so ashamed that there are still areas we're so determined to separate from.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I don't know, it is good news to say there's no barrier.
And that's the whole point. This is the good news, that there is no barrier. That God says, I am with you. I am. He doesn't say, I want to be with you. If he says, I am with you, can you believe that? And you'll believe it because my disciples will manifest it. Mm-hmm. And so when we have disciples who don't manifest it,
right,
who say, well, they're on the other side.
Right.
It just tears it down. It just then it says that it isn't good news. It's the same news that we've always had. If you're this, you can be this. It's the same thing.
Yeah. Do this, you can come in this
right,
far.
Right, exactly, exactly, exactly.
Well, it's Islam.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it becomes a different religion.
Right, exactly.
It morphs into something different.
It is. Mm-hmm. All right, so that was one good example. What other example, Sheila?
My brother had schizophrenia, and he died 10 years ago today.
Wow.
And he was a real extrovert. He loved being with people. He could come into this room, and he was everybody's light. Mm-hmm. But when he became sick, it takes away your affect, and it takes away your ability to communicate with people, mm-hmm. and it becomes a barrier. And he dried up inside because he didn't have this connection to people. Mm-hmm. And one of the things he most was sorry about is he wasn't going to have a family. So when I read the passages about Jesus mm-hmm. loving people with mental illness, I'm like, yes, this is where it is.
Yes.
This is what proves to me that God is real.
Yes.
That he cares about someone who can't be cared for by other people.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that's a really good one. Mental illness, I think, today is a huge barrier for us, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us have experienced that, is when mental illness comes out, mm-hmm. man, all of a sudden people, I don't think I can go there. It's time when most people just leave. Mm-hmm. And Jesus says, what? No. Look at what I do. When I see it, I come. I come. That's when I come. Mm-hmm. So definitely, that's a barrier. Mm-hmm. What other kind of barriers do we see?
Weight.
Yes, appearance, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely appearance. I thought about that. Even when I saw the leper, I thought, yeah, it's not just sores. It's how we look, right?
Well, even that guy, I mean, the Newtown thing, I mean, just how quickly we wanted to separate ourselves from anybody who could do that and anybody who could be that. I was just at a domestic violence seminar, and you know, it's a huge problem. We need to look at it. But the language of, like, well, there's abusers, there's
right.
Then, you know, and just like, yeah. So I feel like those are other two that, you know,
mm-hmm.
Like anything is extreme behavior or mental illness,
mm-hmm.
right, separates.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Old age.
Old age.
My mother-in-law just had to go into a skilled nursing home to rehabilitate. She had an accident. And yeah, I'm going to see her, and there's a lot of old people there. They're all, you know.
Yeah. They're completely separate, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
My brother-in-law's not behaving in his marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Different things, and so our family's been told to not communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And And so, yeah, that's a separate, it's hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man. I just, oof. I think these three passages in Matthew, because I think they're pivotal, they're what the kingdom is about. I think we so miss it and think about it as miraculous things that happen, rather than, no, this is actually what the kingdom is. This is not only Jesus doing, but it's our mission. It's what he sends us to as well. And every one of us is touched by something where there's a barrier, and we're either told not to cross the barrier, or we're, people just show us, yeah, we don't want to cross that barrier. So I think we're all touched by that, which just goes to show you. I mean, Jesus is trying to say, I want to be in all those places. I don't have barriers, nor should we. So I hope that this week we begin to look at the gospel from a new light, and the width of Jesus in us being that light. We're called lights and salt. That means we go out and heal. That means we actually see people and touch people and speak to people, particularly the people that somewhere somebody has put a barrier, say they're them.
Think of the salt too, connecting to the bringing celebration.
Yes.
You know.
Yes, absolutely.
That brings out.
Right.
The flavor.
Right. Exactly. Like, that's a really good point. Yeah, that's good. So let me close. Father, thank you that you are all about healing, restoring, bringing us wholeness, and that you see no barriers, that you are a God who absolutely is with us. May we be with us as well. In Jesus' name, amen.